Let's look at laboratory number 11. You'll be doing the homework part. And what laboratory number 11 is our final lab that deals with JavaScript. Right? Now this one, as we open it up, deals with loops. We spoke about looping as part of our introduction to the halting problem. And indeed, you're going to be writing a program here. You're going to be writing a simple loop program within JavaScript for homework that shows you how you can actually give a certain set of commands to be repeated over and over again. Okay. Now, let's take a look at the examples. We're going to take all the examples that we have. There are a number of examples. You see, there's a whole bunch of them. And they illustrate loops. And then we'll take a look at the source code. Now, let me do the first one. It says, writing lines for an assignment. All right? Writing lines for an assignment. You've all gone through grade school. And sometimes, maybe we didn't act the way we were supposed to. And then the teacher says, all right, write 500 times, I will behave in class. Right? Boy, it would have been nice to have a computer to do that. You want to know why? Take a look. All right, let me open up this example here. All right, we open up the example, and we take a look. This is the first one, and it says, oops, you were caught talking in class. Now you'll have to do an assignment. You will have to write, I will not talk in class. How many times do you have to write it? 500 times, 1,000 times, right? Well, let me just illustrate it for six, okay, just to show you. I'm going to do it six. Imagine how to compute a program to do it. And it says, press here. And believe it or not, there you see six times I will not talk in class. Just like that, right? Of course, six is not that impressive because really, as we said, what the teacher would usually do is tell you to do it 500 times or better, 1,000 times, right? So I'm going to type into this box 1,000. And then I hit the button, press here. And believe it or not, I wrote it 1,000 times. Wow, could you imagine having a computer program to help you do that? How many of you had to write something like that when you were in grade school? Who knows?
But wouldn't that be handwriting?
Just said write it 1,000 times. But wait a minute, the teacher comes over to you and says, what? You say you wrote it 1,000 times? Prove it. I don't want to count. Prove it. So what do you have to do? So in addition to just writing it 1,000 times, I want you to number each one. I want you to show me this number one, number two. I want you to prove it. Any questions? All right, so watch what we can do. Let's go back here for a minute. Let's go to the next example. It says number the lines. Make sure it's done the correct amount of time. Right? Hey, I don't trust you. Say 1,000 times. I can't count it. So let's open up the next example. And it's the same story. So how many times do you want me to write it? I said 1,000 times. So we modified our program. We'll take a look at the source code very shortly. And I press there. And now not only does it say, I will not talk in class, you notice it started at number 1, 2, 3. And it goes on and on and on 1,000 times. Any questions? So the teacher says, maybe you need 5,000 times. No problem. You go back to your program. Instead of 1,000, you put in the number. Let's make it really interesting. You tell the teacher, I'll even do it 10,000 times. And then you hit it. 10,000 is too much, okay? Believe it or not, if you do it, oh, no, that's fine. Okay, yes. All right, let's see if it did it 10,000 times. No problem, all right? Oh, it only did it 7,479. Don't ask me why. All right, there was something there that said it should stop. Okay, let me try it again. A script on this page is causing internet to run slowly. If it continues to run, your computer becomes... Do you want to abort? Oh, no, I don't want to abort. No, I don't want to abort. Nah, no problem. There's 10,000 times. Just as easy as that. All right, time to see how to do this, right? Would have been wonderful to have this, right, to do this. Okay, let's take a look at the source code. Not a difficult source code. I open up the source code, and you'll take a look at it. All right, it's brought into Notepad. And you'll notice, as far as the body is concerned, it's a simple page. It has a form. We had a box to fill in how many times you wanted to write it. You see, it's a form. It says, oops, you were caught talking in class. And there was a text box, how many times you want to do it. And then a button that read the text box. And when you clicked it on click, you were going to call a function. You look in the head, there's a function. Okay? And you're going to pass it the value that was in the text box. Notice it's reading document.myform.number.value. That is the text box. It's the value you typed in. It's read. And it's going to be sent to the function, which is called message. So let's take a look and see how we actually implemented this function, which ended up writing, I will not talk in class, this 10,000. up in the head. Notice there's a function called message. We've learned how to write functions. It has one input parameter, which in the function is called num, and that's going to be the value that was typed into the text box, whether it was 1,000, 10,000. Inside this function, we're creating a variable and giving it an initial value, and notice all it says here is count equal 1. That's how you can create a variable in JavaScript. We've had variables when we had them come out of prompts. We use the value entered into prompts and put them into variables. And here it shows you can create other variables. Here I'm creating a variable that's an integer. You can have the keyword var in front of it. You don't even have to. JavaScript is forgiving. Notice by just saying count equals 1, you've created a variable that is identified by the word count, and I gave it an initial value 1. And this variable count is going to keep count for us how many times we've written I will not talk in class. It's a counting variable, an index into a loop. How many times have we done the same thing over and over again? How do I do that? Now, it turns out in JavaScript there are a few ways for creating loops, for doing a series of instructions over and over again. And this particular program illustrates what's called a while loop. A while loop. And the syntax of a while loop is the following. You see there's this keyword while. You have to start with the word while. And then in parentheses, you have to give what's known as a condition or a Boolean expression, something that can evaluate to either true or false. You're going to be testing something, some condition. And that condition can either be true or false. And if it's true, then you're going to execute, you're going to run the loop. You're going to run the instructions. And you're going to keep doing this until whatever that condition is false. Now, what condition? You notice inside the parentheses, I have written that word count, the identifier count. That is my integer that's going to be keeping track how many times I've looped around. I've also written that word num. Num was the input parameter, which is something that our script is going to be sending to this function, telling it how many times to loop around. And so you have count and you have num, and in between you have what's called a relational operator. A relational operator is going to compare the value on the left to the value on the right. What are relational operators? They are operators of the form greater than, less than, greater than or equal, less than or equal, and not equal. There are 6 relational operators. If you have 2 values, you can compare them to see, is the first less than the second? Is the first greater than the second? Is the first less than or equal to the second? Is the first greater than or equal to the second? Is the first equal to the second? Equal, by the way, is symbolized with 2 equal signs, equal, equal. Is the first not equal to the second? That's an exclamation point followed by an equal sign. In this example here, what do we see? It says while count, notice it has a less than sign and an equal immediately after that. Together, those two, a less than immediately followed by an equal means less than or equal. And what you're asking, what that is comparing, is the current value of count less than or equal to num? Now, how do you answer that? It's either true or false. You look at the current value of count. You look at the current value of num. And you answer either true or false. That's why it's called a condition or a Boolean expression, something that's true or false. Now, we set count equal to 1. And we also sent a value to num, whatever that value was. Let's say it's 1,000. So the first time we come to this condition, if count is 1 and num is 1,000, what is the answer? Is count less than or equal to num, true or false? True. So if it's true, you enter the loop. What is the loop? You see, right after that parenthesis, you have an opening brace. You have a brace. And later on, there's a closing brace. That's a line, you see, under that W. In between that opening brace and the closing brace, you can have a sequence of JavaScript commands that are called the statement of the loop, the commands of the loop. And as long as that condition is true, you're going to be executing that loop. Now, what is that? We have 3 instructions here, 3 commands. And these are familiar to you. What are those 3 commands? The first one is document.count. What does that say here? It's going to be printing the value of count plus concatenating what? A part of a parenthesis, right? The closing parenthesis. Now, that's going to print the value of count, which starts off as 1. And then it puts a closing parenthesis. That's how we're going to number each line. And then the second one is another document that write that says, I will not talk in class. Break. And then the third one that does what? It just increments count. count equals count plus 1. You change the value of count to the next value. Count equals count plus 1. It does the arithmetic operation of adding 1 to count. So if count was 1, it goes to 2. And then assigns it to count. It changes the value of count. Count equals count plus 1 makes count go up by 1. If you have count equals count plus 2, it would go up by 2. So you do the arithmetic operation, count plus 1, and then you assign it to count. And having done those three statements, you see you reach the closing brace, you go back to the condition. And you test the condition again. This is called looping back. You loop back. And count went to 2. So now we test again. Is 2 less than or equal to num? Remember, num is 1,000. It's still true. So you would enter the loop a second time, and once again write the next line. But now count is 2. So it'll put a 2 with a closing parentheses that says, I will not talk in class. And then count will go to 3. And so we will loop around and do these instructions over and over again. How many times? Now, count will eventually hit 900, 901, 902, 998, 999. Notice this, when count is 999, it's still less than 1,000. So it's true. It enters the loop again. Count goes to 1,000. It compares. Is count less than or equal to 1,000? Less than or equal, it's still that. It does it 1,000 times. And it enters. And it's when count hits 1,001, now you go to the condition, and of course when count is 1,001, it's no longer less than or equal to num, it's false, you would finish with the loop, which in this case finishes the function. So notice, we had something that basically wrote it as many times as you want by creating what's called a loop. This is known as a while loop. Any questions? Now the other examples in Lab 11 show you some other ways of doing this, other examples of looping. Let's take a look. It says repeat any phrase. You know, we did I will not talk in class, but the next example, I'll open that one up. I'll just go back and open it up in another window. And the next example, you get to pick your phrase. And notice here it says, what would you like to say? And so I'll say, hi there. Okay, just to give an example with an exclamation point. How many times you want to say it? And I'll just do it 7 times so that we can see it. And I press the button and notice it says 7 times hi there. You think you know how to do this? Think, we've done JavaScript. You're going to be using a loop, a very similar loop. And I just tell it to do 7 times. But how do you get to do the expression? How do you get to enter the expression? What did I do to do that? Notice all I had was another text box. And notice my form, instead of just having a box where I entered how many times to loop, I have another box, another text box, where I can put in any phrase. And so if you think it through, we're going to take a look at the source code. What's going to happen now? The only difference is now that when you send the function, you're going to be sending it not only how many times to loop, but you'll also be sending it a second parameter, what to say. Right? And indeed, let's take a look at the source code. I go take a look at the source code. I bring it up. And if you take a look in the body, indeed, you'll see that there are now 2 text boxes. One of them that's going to be used for entering the phrase, that one is given the title line, and the other one that's used for how many times to loop, that one is given an identifier, name equal to number. And now, if you take a look at the function, in this case, this program calls the function say it. And you'll notice there are 2 input parameters. The message and num. Num is how many times to iterate, how many times to loop. And then message is going to be what you typed into that second box. What is it that you want to say? And indeed, you'll notice that in the body, by the button that's pressed here, on click, you're going to be calling say it. You call the function say it. And now you notice you're passing 2 parameters. The first one is document.myform.line, that value. That you're reading the text box of what to say. And then there's the comma followed by document.myform.number, that value. That's reading the second text box, how many times to loop. And if you go up back to the function that's called say it, you'll notice you have those 2 parameters, message and num. You notice it's the same while loop as before. It's a very similar while loop. While count less than or equal to num. You have that variable count that's counting how many times you're doing the loop. You're comparing it to num, how many times you want to do the loop. Inside, document.write. But notice instead of what we had before, being a fixed message, I will not talk in class, you're going to be printing the variable message, whatever's been sent from the body. And then the next line prints the break, and then you increment count. Any questions? This concept of looping, you can use it in many different ways. If you go back to lab number 11, the next example, shows so many pictures. And it's just another example, whether it's we're going to be writing text or illustrating pictures, you take a look over here, and we run that one, we bring it up, and what you have here is there's a picture of a little balloon, like a colorful beach ball, right? And it says, how many pictures would you like? Really means how many times you want to show this picture. So we can pick a value when you type it into that box. Let's say I say 9. And I hit press here. You notice there are 9 beach balls. Right? So what does it mean? All it means is that the function is going to be displaying the image 9 times. And indeed, if you go back and take a look at the source code here, you'll take a look. As far as the body is concerned, it's very similar to what we had before. You have a text box, you have a button, and when you click it, you're going to call a function. In this case, they gave the name of the function as showPics, showPictures. You're passing it the value you typed into the text box, right? You're reading document.myForm, that number, that value. That's being passed to the function, which calls it num. You notice, again, that same type of while loop. The only difference is, what are you displaying? What are you writing to the page? In this case, document.write. Notice what you're writing. What are you writing? An image tag. You're writing a picture. And of course, to write a picture on an HTML page, you have to create an image tag. And so notice you're writing an image tag. You see the image tag, the source is beachball.gif, that happens to be the name. It happens to be in this computer. Normally, you have to give the complete URL. Don't forget, if you're going to send me in a homework something that does this, to give you the complete URL so I can get to your picture. If you do it over the web, you can't just use a shorthand like in the illustration. You have to have a complete URL, so that when the other person gets it and opens it up in the browser, you can get through the web and get to that picture wherever it's going. But clearly, it's just another loop that's just writing the image tag over and over again on each line. That's why you have that many pictures. Any questions? A couple of more illustrations, and they're all of the same way. They get maybe a little bit more interesting or complex. By the way, the next one is a pause to display and watch the loop. Right? Very similar. Okay, and let me open this one up. The next one, pause the display to watch. Open it in a new window and take a look over here. And again, how many pictures would you like to display? Let me just say 7. And I press the button. Notice what happens. 1 beach ball and an alert box that says press to continue. And then I hit OK. I get the second beach ball and an alert box that says press to continue. Where is this alert program? Where is it? You have to guess, where is the alert? Obviously, to print an alert, it's just, notice we're losing the alert as a pause. And I said, I'm going to do this 7 times, and notice after 7 times that it displays the balloon, the beach ball, it stops. Where was the alert? How did I do that? Where did I put the alert? In the body or the head, in the function, where did I put it? Where does it have to be in order to pause the loop? We're looping. So if you think about it, we can go back, we'll take a look at the source code, and you take a look at it, you see the whole difference was the body was the same as before in the function. Yes, I have a document.write that prints the image, and then right after that you notice there's an alert. Before I increment the count and loop around, I print that alert that says press to continue, and you can use the alert as a pause. And let the person look at it, and then he presses the alert, and then it continues the loop. It just continues the loop. Any questions? Okay, there are a couple of other examples. Let's look at the other examples. The infinite loop I won't do, because if I illustrate that, as it says, it needs to close down the browsers to end. I don't want to do that. You're welcome to run it. All it means is that you can't stop it. It just keeps going and going and going. We've had an illustration of an infinite loop in our lecture. I don't want to run it as an example because I don't want to have to stop my browser. Okay, but I will show you the other ones, complexity issues, all right, some other things that you have here, some complexity issues, and that they ask you over here, they have another picture here, and it says enter a value, and how should it loop? And they talk about linear, quadratic, cubic, and this has to do a little bit with feasibility, infeasibility. Now, when it says linear, I'm going to type in a value. Let's say I tell it, I want it to loop. How should it loop? Or how many times? What it really should be is how many times should it loop? And I can type in a 5. And then I press the button. Take a look at our picture, our little globe. Tell me what it does. All right, first it says starting now. It says we'll loop 5 times. What happened? Okay, let's do it again. Instead of 5, I'll write 10. and it says linear, and loop starting now, loop 10 times, and what happens? You see anything? What's happened? Tell me. What's happened to the image? It's blinking, right? It says a blink. It's changing between two different images, right? Again, we can look at it again. And it's doing it 10 times. Right? It's doing it 10 times. It's blinking. All right, want to know how that's done? How do you think it's done? How do you think it's done? How do you change the image? It's two different pictures. How do you change the picture that's being illustrated within an image? You change what parameter? Any parameter? Which parameter? Come on, an image tag. Which image is displayed? What's the parameter? All right, let's take a look at the source code. You take a look at the source code. What do you have here? Now, this is a very heavy source code, but the basic idea here is when you do this, you're going to change the source parameter. The source parameter. And you'll go through it. You can go through it, and you'll see there are two different images. All right, on click, you're going to be basically sending two different images. They're two different pictures. And you end up changing the source parameter. I will let you go through that. Now, what this is really illustrating is the differences between if you have a loop that's linear, meaning whatever number I said, 10, it's going to do it 10 times. Or if you click, there are radio buttons here. If you click on quadratic, if I said enter a value 10 and I hit loop, now quadratic means, let's say that some function is running, is going to do it based on whatever value n squared. So if I said 10, it's going to do it 100 times, see? Then if I begin it, notice it takes longer and longer because now it's doing 100 times. And it's still doing it. And it's still doing it because it's doing it 100 times. Will it ever stop? This illustrates the feasibility problem. And it's still doing it. It takes a long time to do 100 blinks. And eventually, it stops. Now, can you imagine if I try doing it cubic? That means if I enter 10, how many times will it blink? 1,000. You're welcome to try it. Exponential raises it to a power. You're welcome to try it. And factorial would do 10 factorial. I'm not going to run it in class. We will be here a long time if I do a 10 factorial. You're welcome to try it. As part of your laboratory, you'll be doing a little, as part of your homework, you're going to have to be doing a little bit of comparison of these methods. And which ones are faster, which one is slower. We basically illustrated it. Linear, obviously, is fast. And as you go up in complexity, quadratic, cubic, for reasonable numbers of n, it gets slower and slower. If it was n is 10, linear takes 10 times. Quadratic, 100 times. Obviously, it's 10 times slower. Cubic is 1,000 times. And factorial is the slowest of them all because of the number of iterations. All right, any questions on that? There's one more example I want to show you, and we spoke about this a little bit during lecture, but I want to illustrate it here, and it's just a demo. Go back to the lab. It says, here is a demo of several sorting algorithms, illustrating both different algorithms for sorting and their efficiency. Now, I remember in class, how many different sorting algorithms? We had this example of, in the lecture, we had about sorting n objects, and I showed you two algorithms. Which two? The selection sort. And then we said, all right, let's try it exhaustively by trying what? By trying by permuting everything, lining them all up, the exhaustive search, right? Now, let's click on this demo, the final demo that we have here. And I mentioned even during lecture that the selection sort, even though it was a lot better than an exhaustive search, but it's not the most efficient. Not the most efficient. Not the most efficient. Now, what I'd like to show you here is we go to this place. It's called Sorting Algorithms. And they actually list a whole bunch. Now, the implementations of the algorithms are not important. But there's an illustration, but it actually has demos of illustrations of these algorithms. Now, the first algorithm shown is called a bubble sort. I'll get to that in a moment. But let's go down two down to what it says, selection sort. And I'm going to show you, I'm going to illustrate these algorithms. Let's run them. I'm going to run them. You can click on these little pictures, and it'll sort the picture. Now, what do you have? In each picture, you have lines of different length, right? Lines of different length. And the idea of all these algorithms is to sort these lines. Which is the shortest line? Which is the next shortest, until the longest? If you remember the selection sort, the way that worked First, it looked through all n objects and picked the one you're looking at. In this case, it would be the shortest line. And then the second shortest, the third shortest, and so on. Now, I'm going to click on it, and it's going to run the algorithm. And let's see how long it takes. All right? It's going to take a little bit of time. So let me click on it, and you're actually going to see the algorithm begin to run. Okay? I double-click, and notice it begins. You see? It's running through it. Notice it's going from top to bottom. It's scanning all the items. It first scanned all n items, found the shortest one. It then scanned the remaining n minus 1, found the next shortest. And that's selecting which is the next item in the order. Which is the next item in the order. Now notice it's taking quite a bit of time. Notice that red line is illustrating where it's up to. But notice it's slowly, slowly putting things in order. So the first time it had to select from n, the second time from n minus 1, n minus 2. And it's taking a bit of time, right? Yes, it was much more efficient than the one that looked at all permutations, but it's taking a bit of time, it's taking a bit of time. The reason I'm showing you this is I will then show you a little bit later. I've mentioned there are other algorithms that are a lot more efficient than even the selection sort, and I will illustrate them. Notice we finished. And are they in order? You'll have to say yes, right? From the shortest to longest, it took a certain amount of time. Okay. Let's go up two algorithms to what's called a bubble sort. The bubble sort. All right? Now, the bubble sort is a different algorithm. Now, which way did the selection sort work? First, it got the shortest, the next shortest, the next shortest. Notice it found what goes in position 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to click on the bubble sort and watch this one and tell me what's happening. All right, in your own words, it's starting to sort. Yes?
It first,
it first found the longest. And what's happening? And then? It's bubbling up. That's why it's called a bubble sort. Notice it's bubbling up from the bottom. Just the opposite of the selection sort. The selection sort found the shortest, the next, who's in position 1, 2, 3, 4. And this one is doing it just the opposite. It's bubbling up from the bottom. It found the largest, the next, the next, the next, the next. It's called a bubble sort. It works differently. It's a total different algorithm. And it implements it in basically the other way. But notice it's also taking quite a bit of time. It's bubbling up from the bottom. And eventually, once they're sorted, it stops. It didn't actually have to do all possible things. It turns out to be just as inefficient as the selection sort, but it does it in the opposite direction. Whereas the selection sort sort of went from top to bottom, the bubble sort bubbled up from the bottom to the top. You notice how long it took, right? We were talking and talking. I'm not going to do all the algorithms. You're welcome to go ahead and try all of them. Let's go down later. And let me show you some really nice ones, okay? Some interesting ones that are okay. Later on, there's something called, let's go down, you can try all, a heap sort. All right? A heap sort. There's one called a heap sort. Just to show you, again, how it works, not interested, but just to show you that you can get, it looks like it's moving things around, moving things around, moving things around, moving things around, moving things, oh, no, it looks like it's starting to put things in order, right? And sure enough, it did it. Was it faster than bubble or selection? Yes. Right? Okay, you know, I can click on it again to show it to you again. But, you know, it's moving things. What it's doing, what it is, don't worry about. But just to show you, it's quicker. This isn't even the quickest. All right? Matter of fact, let's go to one right below that called, what's the name? Quicksort. All right? I'm clicking on it. Let's see what this is doing. How do you like that one? How do you like that one? Remember, it's sorting the same amount of little sticks that have to be put in order. You like that one? It has a name, Quicksort, for a reason. It's one of the most efficient algorithms that are out there. One of the most efficient. How, what, when? Notice it was a lot faster than the selection sort. In computer science, we have a whole course on sorting. Sorting and searching, because of which method to use. And it makes a difference. It makes things feasible. It makes things feasible. Matter of fact, that quicksort algorithm isn't even the fastest one. Notice there's something called enhanced quicksort, fast quicksort. And you want to look at what's a little fat. Look at that one. This is enhanced quicksort. Or the fast quicksort. Look at this one. How do you like that? You like fast quicksort? It's an enhancement on quicksort. All right? I mean, you can sort of see like it's doing things. How do you like that? Notice which algorithm you use makes a difference. Which algorithm you use makes a difference. One of the nicest ones I like to show, and matter of fact, I use it as the last demo when we do this, is this radix sort algorithm. All right? Now, in quicksort, even there, it's sort of, if you look at it, it seems to be putting things in order, and it's doing it rather quickly, right? It seems to be putting things in order, and it does it rather quickly. I want you to look, I'm going to click on radix sort. And I find something very interesting about radix sort. Again, there is an algorithm, obviously, that's implemented. But it's interesting. Let me first maybe run it and then just talk about it for a moment. All right, I'm going to click on it right now. It looks like, it doesn't look like it did much there, right? Boom! How do you like that one? See, quick sort, you know, it's fast, and it looks like it's putting things in order along the way. Radix sort, if you look at that, it doesn't look like it's putting things in order. One, two, it doesn't look anything, and then boom! How did it do that? Almost amazing, right? You see the difference what I'm pointing out? So it's very, very fast. But the quick sort is doing it fast in order, it looks like. And you would think when you click on radix sort, it doesn't look like it's doing it in order. First pass, second pass, doesn't look anything's in order, and amazingly, everything's in order. So algorithms matter. And depending on which algorithm you have, problems can be feasible or infeasible. Selection sort for large values of n is infeasible. Bubble sort for large values of n is infeasible. Quick sort, radix sort, even for large values of n, are feasible. Any questions? Okay? All right, let's just conclude this. You're welcome to run through these. These are very interesting illustrations. If you actually click on it, they have the whole implementation, but you don't have to look at the implementation. Just enjoy them. Just to show you what the homework is going to be, the actual homework you have to do, if you open up homework number 11, you'll see that it's very simple. There are three parts to it, two of which are required. The third one is extra credit. All right, the first part, let's just read along. It says, write an HTML page that uses a prompt or an input text box to get an input number. I wonder if we've seen source code to do that. Okay. This page should also contain a button. When the button is pressed, the page should display the word ouch that many times. So if the user enters 5, the page should display ouch. Is this a difficult thing to do? How much different is it than writing I will not talk in class 5 times or 10 times or 15 times or whatever it is, right? It's really the same thing, okay? Part 2, look at the example that demonstrates different types of loops. We saw the linear, the quadratic, the cubic. Which type of loop takes the longest? Make a statement, whether it's the linear or the cubic or the quadratic or the factorial, okay? How many times can you tolerate a quadratic loop? This is really for you to say, you know, each person can give a different answer. I can tolerate it 9 times or 20 times, or I get tired after so many times. It's subjective. It's really a subjective answer. How many times can you tolerate a factorial loop? All right, that's the one that really takes the longest. And you will get tired. But start it small. Start it with 2 factorial. 2 factorial is just 2. 3 factorial is 6. 4 factorial is 24, but it goes up very quickly. 5 factorial is 120. 6 factorial is 720. Uh-oh. You figure out 8 factorial. Okay? And notice it goes up very, very quickly. How many times it's going to loop? For extra credit, write an HTML page that will get a value from the user and then will generate a dynamic HTML page that will contain a list of items corresponding to the number given. For example, if the user enters 3, but of course I can say 3, 5, 7, the page should display a bullet and say item 1, bullet item 2. So you're displaying a bullet, you're making a list. It has to display as a list. And then separate items, item 1, item 2, item 3. You could say the word item, but the number has to be different. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 10, 12, whatever it is. So you're creating a dynamic list. That's extra credit. How much different is it than writing I will not talk in class 1,000 times? Not much different. But you're welcome to do that. Any questions? All right. That ends today's lecture and the introduction to the lab.